Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. I'm really excited to bring this episode to you today as I'm sitting down with Callum Shepherd, who is an Australian paramedic living and working in London Ambulance Service as a HART or a Hazardous Area Response Team paramedic training officer. Now today we're going to talk about his transition from Australia to the UK and also about his role in HART and what learnings and takeaways that he's gotten from that experience in HART and how they've translated over into everyday paramedicine. So thank you so much for joining me today, Callum. Firstly, though, I'll get you to introduce yourself if that's all right.
Hi, everyone. My name's Callum Shepherd. So currently I'm working as a Hazardous Area Response Team Paramedic Training Officer. That's a very long title, I know, but currently working for London Ambulance Service here in London in the UK. So originally I trained at Monash University back in Australia, in Melbourne. And then in about 2016 or the very start of 2016, I was on the kind of one of the initial recruitment drives that sent over loads of Aussies from different parts of Australia over to the UK. So from my uni alone, in my kind of third year that graduated, there was about 20 to 30 of us that moved over. So I had a nice little family already, a group of people that I knew. But then also around the same time, there was probably about, I think, 300 to 400 people in that kind of same time frame, all from Australia that moved over. So there was already that kind of little Australian community. From there, yeah, moved over, started working on ambulances, a very similar experience to Alex, you know, a few shifts here and there, and then off you go, you're out there in the world, off, you know, solving life's problems and treating patients and doing all those wonderful things. So that was a very eye-opening experience. And I mean, moving over here, living overseas, you know, I moved out of home overseas and into a new job at 21 years old, never having done any of that before. It was an absolute eye-opener. And Alex, I'm sure you felt it's been the exact same.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So then started working in the ambulance service, worked on what we call double crewed ambulances over here. So they're just kind of, you know, two person ambulances back in Australia. And then from there started working on the solo responding cars. So the solo responding cars here in the UK, they're generally targeted towards the high priority calls, and they try to keep those cars more available so that we have better kind of category one call cover. So yeah, did a bit of work on them. Then did a bit on the cycle response unit, which is kind of a push bike that operates in central London. So on that, the bike itself probably weighs anywhere between 60 to 70 kilos because we've got a defibrillator on there, we've got oxygen, we've got Entonox, we've got, you know, all the medications and drugs that you can imagine, and we're riding around on pedal cycles. Now, obviously me not being from here, I didn't really know where I was going most of the time, but I did have a map and I had Google Maps, which kind of got me to all the jobs. So that was a really cool experience. And that kind of job, it taught me a lot about, you know, not having much kit, but doing the basics really, really well. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I've learned is you can learn everything about medicine and you can go into all different patterns and pathways of healthcare and paramedicine. But if you can't do the basics well, then, you know, where are you going to end up? You're going to come into kind of problems and obstructions. So, yeah, did a bit on the cycle response, then became a kind of paramedic mentor, mentored some student paramedics, mentored some newly qualified paramedics or NQPs, as they're called over here. Did that for a little bit. And then from there, where did I go? Then I moved on to HART. So what is HART for all those people wondering at home? So HART is the Hazardous Area Response Team. And essentially it is a group of paramedics that are employed by each ambulance service that respond to incidents of a hazardous nature. So without going too much into detail, but I'll do kind of a bit of a whistle stop tour of what it is. Essentially, there's about 13 ambulance services in the UK that provide ambulance cover to England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. And of them, 16 heart units exist. So some of the ambulance service, they have two teams of heart units. A heart unit is generally made up of a group of team leaders, so about six or seven team leaders, depending on how many teams that they have, and then a group of about 45 to 50 paramedics that work under those team leaders. So in London, we have per site seven teams of eight people, but some of the other ambulance services and NHS trusts, they do it slightly differently. So heart itself, essentially it's a kind of I guess the reason, sorry, why heart was developed is they looked at it nationally and they thought, whenever we're sending whenever we're going to these complex jobs, sometimes we're not getting paramedics into the patient, and that's the issue. And that's kind of where heart stemmed from. So previously, if we went to, say, a road traffic collision or a fire or some kind of CBRN, so chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear type job, they would typically send in either the fire and rescue service to rapidly extricate people, or they'd send in the police as well. But there wasn't any scope for paramedics to go in. And this was probably about 10 to 15 years ago before heart first started. So the point of heart was to get paramedics to the patient. And the way that we do that is we train paramedics who have a bit of experience. They're all qualified paramedics. And then we train them in a bunch of skills that allows them to safely access patients in kind of varying capacities. Yeah, so some of the capacities, so we do a different type of kind of CBRN or hazardous materials type training. We do a support to security operations. So this is supporting local police, armed forces, any kind of royals and stuff that happen to be around. We also do lots of things to do with responding to mass casualty incidents and kind of what we call marauding terrorist attacks over here. I know that in Australia that term is called active armed offenders. So that's kind of a person who is going around trying to cause lots of harm and damage and kill lots of people in the community. And unfortunately, we have had quite a few of those incidents happen here in the UK, particularly London Bridge, Westminster, Fishmongers Hall, so all those types of incidents. Additionally, all of the heart paramedics, we're all trained to a swift water rescue technician standard. So that means that we can get in the water wearing kind of specialist PPE, rescue people that happen to be in kind of flood waters or floating downstream, rescue them, hopefully bring them back to the bank, and then start providing patient care. And then on top of that, we do some safe working at height stuff. So putting on a harness, getting some scaff hooks, and then kind of attaching on and climbing up structures. So the common types of jobs that we use our safe working at height on is lots of kind of building sites, commercial building sites, people injured on roofs, people falling in tunnels, in holes, people under trains, all those different types of things we tend to use kind of harnesses and rope systems for. And then additionally with that, we also have a remit for high risk confined space. So that's going into these tunnels wearing breathing apparatus like what the fire brigade wear that provide us with our safe system of work. And then also urban search and rescue. So kind of collapsed buildings, collapsed structures, anything like that, that's also within our remit. So we do, I think we do quite a lot. And it's a very strange job, to be honest. It's something I never thought I'd get into, but I absolutely love it. And I'd say the one kind of comparison that we have to Australia is I know that New South Wales do their SOT team, their Special Operations Response Team. And that's probably the closest thing that we are similar to Australia in. But I don't know, it's been an incredible experience so far. I think the people always say, you know, what's the best bit of heart? What do you absolutely love about it? And there's quite a few things. I think the initial training that we do is quite incredible. It's, you know, some of the best training venues that exist in the UK, if not the world. We've got some really qualified and experienced instructors that teach us all of these different disciplines. And the initial training goes for somewhere between kind of 6 to 12 weeks to get all of your competencies. So a lot of that time you're away from home, you're up and down the country, you're doing loads of different things, and kind of learning all these new skill sets. And the only bad thing is it's kind of like going back to uni and you're just like, oh, you know, more knowledge. I don't want to learn any of this. But overall, a really, really good experience. And yeah, that's kind of a general nutshell of what heart is.
That's really awesome. I think it's such a fantastic amount of experience and obviously extra qualifications and training that you get. that, you know, you never really think about. I never thought that this was something that you could do when, you know, back on first, second year of uni. So it's really awesome that you have that opportunity to do that and really just think outside of the box when it comes to paramedics. I think you talk to most people and they think a paramedic just quite literally is on an ambulance, and whilst that makes up majority of people, there's people like yourself in heart, there's people working over here in particular in the UK in GP services, in hospitals, in, you know, private sectors. You've got your critical care that everyone knows about, and urgent care, which is more your extended roles where you're doing sort of more that I guess I'd say GP sort of stuff, but more so keeping people out of hospital. So there's just so many different realms. But I love the point that you said at the first, the first instance, which is doing your basics and getting to know your basics really, really well. Because I feel like as a student, you always think about what's the next best thing, particularly when it comes to graduating, because you've always got to try and feel like you've got that competitive edge to get a job, particularly in Australia. And then I feel like you get into your grad year and it's really easy to be like, oh, what's, you know, the next uni course I need to do? What's the next qualification I need to get? But really just taking it slow, enjoying the process and really developing your clinical decision, making skills, and also just understanding the basics. I think that's really, really important and crucial.
Absolutely.
What are some of the things that you've done in heart, or the things you've learned in heart, that you think would have been really beneficial to know as a paramedic on road?
So, I mean, I could speak for hours about this, but I'll try and keep it somewhat short and sweet. I think the biggest thing that I have learned on heart is this concept of risk. And risk exists everywhere, and there's hazards that are everywhere in pre-hospital care. So, for example, so when I just just moved over to the UK, was working as a paramedic, I think I went to a patient that had fallen off maybe a first floor and landed on some kind of like balcony or something. And I got there as a paramedic and I've gone, oh, you know, someone's on the balcony, or maybe they were on a roof or something. I can't remember, but I just climbed up there and I went there and, you know, I got very task focused and I was providing patient care and I thought I was doing the best thing possible and I was trying to save that patient. But there was a few issues with that looking on reflection. So one of them is I was so task focused that I was completely unaware that there was probably about a 10 meter drop just right behind me, because all I did was I saw the patient and I just went running straight up. The second thing was there was nothing that was securing me in place. So if I fell, I was going to probably fall that whole 10 meters. And as a result, you know, I probably would have gotten quite a few injuries. So I think the biggest thing that I've learned on heart is understanding risk. And it's something that I don't think is taught much at university. And I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing, because I think a lot of the kind of risks that we face in everyday life, they're things that we just know. And that's from growing up, from speaking to our parents, watching television. So for example, a hot stove, you know, it's going to be hot. So that's why you don't put your hand on it. You know, a large staircase or a large drop off, you know, not to go near it because you might fall off. But when we start to move into the world of pre-hospital care, you know, we put on that uniform and we show up to work and we start to go towards those patients, there's this something that happens to us and we kind of think that we're invincible. And I think with that, we take kind of an unnecessary amount of risk. And so I also teach at university back in Australia. And something that I always say to my students is, be very careful what you're doing, because you still need to go home at the end of the night to your friends, to your family, to your workplace. And there's no point in coming into work, you making a decision which you think is right at the time, but unfortunately it puts you at a high degree of risk. And then as a result, you can be harmed. So I'd say the biggest thing I've learned on being on heart is kind of understanding risk and also understanding hazards. For me, it's not the everyday job of, you know, going to a massive house fire where, you know, you can see the risk of smoke and fire and slips, trips and falls and, you know, collapsed buildings and all those types of things. They're the relatively obvious ones. But even with that, because those jobs are in essence quite traumatic and very visual, people tend to be overwhelmed and then they get very task focused and they lose that kind of situational awareness and what's happening around them. So the key that I always say is show up, and like you've probably been taught at uni, but you show up, have a look at the scene, and then just take at least 10 seconds and think, should I move forward or should I just stay where I am and ask for help? Because the amount of incidents that we go to that people just go running forward and they put themselves at risk. And so I'll give you another example with that. So I was once the paramedic that was on the roof that was nearly falling off because I was task focused. I had a team leader show up and they said, hey, get off that roof, come down, you know, make yourself safe. You're being a bit silly. And I thought, yeah, fair enough. But a few years after that, I was the heart paramedic going to the job where we went to a basement that was being excavated from a property, and they were going to install kind of a basement. I think it was a basement pool even in there. So we got there, and essentially a part of the wall that was under the property, it's called a wedge failure. So a massive bit of kind of mud and debris essentially fell out of the wall, and it landed on one of the builders, and it broke his, he had a complete mid-shaft femur, just went straight through, and probably a good 200 to 300 kilos of solid kind of mud, soily, rocky stuff just sitting on his femur. So we got there as the heart response. Now, bearing in mind, there's not many of us. We're based in East and West London, at least here in London, but you know, across the UK, there's not that many heart bases. So it does take us about 20 to 30 minutes to get to quite a lot of jobs, if not more, depending on where you are in the UK. I got on scene as the first heart resource and walked inside, went into the basement. I put my helmet on, you know, I put my harness on as well, because I know that I'm probably going to be going into a basement. I'll provide myself with that safe system of work. And as I got there, there was a paramedic and I think it was an EMT, and they were in the hole next to the patient where the wall had just failed. So I said to them, what are you doing down there? And they said, oh, we're here treating the patient. And I said, but the wall has just failed next to you. You know, we know that there is a risk that that's going to furtherly kind of structurally collapse again. Why are you putting yourself at risk? But I think they went in, and I've been guilty of it too. And this is why I'm not kind of angry at them, because I've done the same thing. They just went in very task focused. They saw the patient and they just went running towards them. But what they didn't realize is they climbed down two ladders into a basement. They, you know, there's building works going on there. So the quality of air and the oxygen that's available within that kind of basement might be reduced. They've gone into an area where they've known that there is a collapsed structure, and then they've put themselves right next to the collapsed structure with no way to get out. So when I explained it to them like that, I said, let's get you out of there, you know, pop them back up the top. Once the rest of the heart team arrived, we kind of formulated a bit of a plan, sent two of us down there. And then as we were down there, the wall started to collapse even further. So we had to drag the patient away. And it was, in a sense, almost a near miss before we had to rapidly get the patient out. And then the wall completely collapsed. So quite a lot of the basement collapsed into that hole. So I know I'm waffling here, but looping back to the kind of original thing, the understanding of what risk is and how hazardous everyday kind of jobs can be, I'd say that's the biggest thing that I've learned. And where possible, you know, if people are wanting to learn, I'm always happy to have a chat about what is risk, you know, what are those risky environments and what are the key things to look out for. So, yeah, I hope that's answered that question.
Yeah, absolutely. You bring up such a good point, because realistically, the things we always think about, or the way we present ourselves in a scenario at uni, for example, is you go into it, you do your D for danger, you think people/person, place, an object or anything like that. But then you just go tick and you never really think about it again. And recently, yeah, I was speaking to the guys that run, the run personal safety training. It's just Guardian. They do this violence protection and personal safety training. They're both paramedics, but they basically said that, you know, we only ever get taught to do it at the start, and then we never reassess as we go. And I think, yeah, to bring in an extra added point of the fact that we only ever really think about sort of the big bad things, and potentially just, for example, like weapons and the way that a person presents, whether they be agitated or violent, but we never really think about the actual environment itself, which is a really big component to what you do. It's the situation that you're doing everything in. So I think that's a really, really important point that even I don't really think about on a daily basis, which I really need to.
Yeah. And I think this is the key thing though. I mean, you know, As a paramedic that was going out there on the road, I would just show up to the job and I would just walk in, and I would not have that perception of what is danger and what is risk. I did the same thing at uni. You walk into the room, you go, I've got my gloves on, I've got my goggles on, there's no people that are going to hurt me, the environment looks okay, and then you just walk straight forward. But unfortunately, in the uni setting, you're in that very clinical atmosphere where it's a nice clean room, there's just chairs around, there's no actual inherent dangers that exist, and it's trying to then remove yourself to an environment that's real and then actually start to take on board what those dangers are. I think the key is we don't train people about dangers. We just expect people to know what is dangerous, and that's probably, I'd say, a part of a failure of the university system is we need to start teaching these people that are going out there, that are putting themselves, hooning around and driving along on lights and sirens through busy areas and kind of rural areas as well. And then once they get to the job, they're just expected to kind of operate like they're a clinician working in a hospital. But there's so many other factors to this job, and particularly around kind of risk and hazards that exist in the world. But I just don't think that we have enough education in that area. So, yeah, that's just my point on that.
Oh, exactly. And well, I feel like too, if the sort of thought of the line of thought for there in being like you don't learn it as much in uni is that you'll do it on placement. But then, like we're sitting here now, like if you haven't ever really thought about it or haven't actually put that into place in your scenarios at uni or really thought about it, you're going to go out onto your placement and you're going to have mentors that potentially haven't really thought about it either or. They're the ones that will be teaching you, I guess, what they know and what they've experienced, but you haven't actually had that formal training. Whereas obviously in your training with Heart, like that is the one of that is the mainstay of your training. So I feel like, yeah, it's something that whilst you may not learn in uni, it's something that maybe as a student you can go on your placements and probably pick the brains of all your mentors. And likewise as a graduate, pick the brains of all the people that have been in the job for a long time, or if you've got access to people like yourself and talk to people that are in Heart.
Yeah, I'd say the hardest thing of kind of learning about risk, and particularly when you're approaching people and you're saying, oh, like one, how do you ask someone, oh, what do you think's risky on this job? Because they'll probably just go, oh, stairs, patient might be a bit angry, a few other bits and bobs, cat and dog, that's a very common one, all those types of things. But until a person has actually got lived experiences, and until a person has experienced risk, and until someone is kind of educated around what is risky, what is a hazard, and how might it harm you, that's kind of where it stops. Because if people don't know that the risk exists, you can't be angry at them for it. But equally, they can't then pass on that information to their mentees and to the people that they're working with. So it's really, really challenging. I'd say, looking back, I mean, now that I've kind of moved into this world, and a part of our job on a daily basis is showing up to an incident, we're very good at doing our kind of documented risk assessments along with our dynamic risk assessments, considering our equipment and all of our PPE and our standard operating procedures, and then implementing a plan. I think when it comes to risk, if you don't have that understanding of what it is and how it's going to harm you, when you show up to that job, you don't think about all the policies, the procedures, what you should do, what you shouldn't do. You just go, oh, there's a patient there. Doesn't look too bad. Off I go. And you just kind of walk straight forward. I'd say the other thing, and this is kind of one of the things I harp on about to some of my students, is just try not to put yourself at risk. So, for example, if there's water there, don't go jumping in the water. If a patient's up high, or down a ladder, down quite low, don't go up or down the ladder unless you absolutely have to. Try and get in someone who is qualified and appropriate to do that, because you're going to protect yourself. And also, when you're working for an organization, they have an obligation to protect you as well as an individual. But yeah, sorry, I think I might have got a little bit off track there.
No, it's perfect. I really appreciate it because it's the advice and the lived experience that you have that, again, you don't learn in a textbook. So this is really valuable to know, particularly that situational awareness and having and that real understanding of what risk is and how to identify it to keep yourself safe. Because, like you said, at the end of the day, you want to get home to your loved ones and your friends, and that's the main key point. safety, well, D for absolutely. Danger does come first, and hence your safety comes first. It's really important. So I really like that. We've talked about sort of how your learnings from Hart would have helped in terms of being a paramedic and going through all that situational awareness and the risk. What sort of aspects of Hart do you find and the training that you've done and working in austere environments has helped sort of with, I guess, your clinical decision-making and developing that? Because I'm sure, obviously, going to certain situations, you may have long extrication processes, obviously dangerous environments, etc. How do you think all of that has developed your clinical decision-making a bit more so than what you would have been on the road?
So I think this kind of also stems back to that conversation that I was having around when I was working on the push bikes. So sometimes when you're in these austere environments and they are very risky and you're a long way away from your kit, the key is just doing the basics really, really well. And that's everything from your, you know, your Dr. CABC, so your catastrophic hemorrhage, and then your airway breathing circulation. But it's just making sure that you're doing those basics really well. In terms of how it's impacted my clinical decision-making, I'd say that now, after a period of time on being in Hart, I now feel like I can more confidently operate in those austere environments. And I think it's because of this idea of stress. So if you show up to a job and you're immediately stressed, you're probably just going to do the bare minimum. But if you show up to a job and you're stressed, and then if you keep showing up to a similar type of job, your level of stress will start to kind of get tolerated, kind of like a muscle. And so similarly with kind of austere environments and kind of Hart environments, if we train people in these risky environments and put them under stress, then hopefully when push comes to shove, their clinical decision-making will be pretty good, because there's no point sending someone into these at-risk environments if when they get there, they're ineffective. We need people to be effective clinicians as we put them in there. I'd say, particularly with Hart, you know, we do, especially in London, we deal with lots of trauma jobs, lots of polytrauma, lots to do with our critical care paramedics and our HEMS teams as well. So I'd say, yeah, definitely my critical care knowledge has increased, and kind of, you know, our CABC approach. I'd say the other thing that has been interesting for my clinical decision making, so one of the unique things, and I think I forgot to mention this before, but Hart teams typically consist of, you know, anywhere between 6 and 8 people, and you respond to a job as a team of 6 to 8 paramedics. So having 6 to 8 paramedics on a job sometimes is not the best thing, because that's 6 to 8 opinions, and sometimes a lot of them are conflicting. Now, the good thing with that is when it's a really big job and there's lots happening, you've then got 6 to 8 clinicians that you can just, you know, delegate out different roles and responsibilities. And you know that they're going to be really, really good in those roles. But sometimes when there's one patient, you've got 6 to 8 clinicians all trying to treat and address one person. And you can already imagine how the clinical decision making can sometimes be not as cohesive, because you've got all these opinions trying to influence one patient's care, where sometimes you just need one person to take the lead and then everyone else to kind of, you know, essentially follow, because I think leadership and followership are equally just as important. And I think that's something that we do quite well on Hart. So yeah, I'd say clinical decision-making has definitely been impacted, but I think that's also because of the type of incident and the type of call that we go to. And with that, you know, attending a higher frequency of sicker patients, it further just develops your clinical decision-making, your exposure, and then also how you make decisions on future jobs and kind of learning from previous ones.
Yeah, for sure. I guess it's that hedonic sort of adaptation that you learn over time. And I guess the more things that you do, the better muscle memory you get at doing it. And obviously that sort of bandwidth that you've got for that is no longer super narrow that you have at the start doing it for the first time.
Yeah,
you bring up a really good point or a really good concept that I'd love you to go into. I don't think it's really been talked about before on the podcast, which is the followership and leadership. And obviously it makes up a huge component, as you said, to your role in Hart. But I think it's a really important role or concept, because you might go to a job anyway and there might be multiple agencies as well as multiple ambulance crews on scene. So I think it becomes a really important component to the job. But I'd love for you to go through that concept.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think leadership is talked about heaps, all the different styles of leadership, autocratic, democratic, all those different things. And that's absolutely wonderful. But if you're on scene and you have 20 people trying to lead it, no one's actually doing anything. Everyone's leading and everyone's organizing things and things are going great. But in terms of, feet on the ground, hands on the patient, casualty care being provided, it's probably not really happening because everyone's trying to lead and take over. So followership, I think, is something that particularly my heart team, I think we do it all right. I mean, obviously, we can't do it perfectly, but I think generally as clinicians, it's something that some people do really struggle with. And I think that's because when we go through uni, we get taught you're going to be in charge, you're going to be the lead clinician. Every job you go to, you're going to be the one that's running the cardiac arrest, that's delivering the baby, that's, managing the major incident. You're going to be doing everything. But then the second that you get there and someone else is doing that role, a lot of people go, "Oh, what am I supposed to do now? How do I fit into this team?" So I think the key thing with followership is knowing or kind of having that ability to recognize that everything that's going on in the scene is actually going okay. Now, bearing in mind, there might be some kind of safety critical issue or something big that is not happening that needs to be happening, and that might need to be addressed. And that's where kind of the leadership and that discussion can happen. But if you show up on scene and everything's going okay, the best thing that you can do is you can ask whoever is leading, "How can I help?" All you need to do is you just need to approach them and don't even say, "Oh, I love your work, love how this is going. This is going really well. I'm enjoying that." All you need to do is say, "What do you need me to do? How can I help?" And I think that's a really, really important thing. And that's something that we're not really taught as paramedics. Particularly as paramedics, one of the pushes of the kind of career change that's occurred over the past kind of 20 to 30 years is paramedics are autonomous, solo responding, we make our own decisions, we do everything by ourselves, we have this high level of autonomy, which is great. But the second that you get 10 paramedics together, unless there is kind of a rank structure in place, a lot of them, they have that this kind of constant battle with who is in charge. Now, additionally, with that, sometimes people think that having a team leader or a critical care paramedic or a HEMS paramedic on scene is immediately they can just get rid of all of their leadership and they can just become a complete follower. Now, in the most part, that's somewhat a good thing, but still, our HEMS paramedics, our critical care paramedics, our team leaders, all of them can still get task focused. So it's still important to recognize if a scene is going well, and that's for every clinician across the board, and I'm pretty sure that quite a lot of people would support me on that. But don't just show up to a scene and see someone that's more qualified than you and immediately just go, "Oh, all responsibility's gone." Still have a little bit of situational awareness and still try and just generally see, is the scene looking okay? Does this person look like they're at the end of their bandwidth? Do they look like they're still making effective decisions? And then if your answer is yes, and remember, your answer can change over time as the incident kind of changes in nature. But if your answer is yes, then go, "Cool, I'm going to be a bit of a follower for this one. And I'm going to try and receive tasks from people just to offload stress from them and then let them hopefully do the rest of their job better." So yeah, that's kind of my description on followership. I think followership is so important. And hopefully it's something that will become a little bit more second nature to the ambulance service, because currently I don't think it's fully there, but hopefully we'll get there.
That's really interesting. Yeah, as you said, I think it could probably have its own podcast, to be honest, because it's that important. But I think too, as you said, students, obviously you go into uni and you do your scenarios and say you're the primary, you're the secondary, and that's that. I think really important thing as well is I remember reading in The Good, the Bad, the Ugly Paramedic. I can't remember if it was the student handbook or if it was the paramedic handbook. But basically, there was a point in there that said, learn how to be a really good secondary officer that thinks about everything else as well. So, not just being so focused on the patient, but think about extrication plans, think about what this person may need, kind of be that person that's sort of thinking ahead and having a step back is really important. I feel like it can fit into that followership role. Whilst you may not be necessarily leading the case, you can just in a general sort of everyday case, you can be that person that sort of sorts everything out in the back, in the behind the scenes sort of process. And I guess part of that too is someone said to me on a placement, think about this day on this shift, think about being a really good secondary paramedic. So, you know, you're coming to the end of your uni degree and you're coming to the end of your last placement. You know, you've been focused on being the primary paramedic for a long time. Now think about being that secondary person and think about all the extrications devices you may need and what that person may need going forward. And I thought that was a really great way to utilize placement as well to become better at that.
Absolutely, yeah, I completely agree. I think that knowing, you know, letting your colleagues actually lead jobs is really important because they need it for their own kind of their fix. That's why we all do healthcare. We all want to help people. So let them have their fix. And then when they're doing that, try and help them out in any other way that you can. So, I mean, the amount of times I felt like a removalist and I'm moving wardrobes and I'm moving tables in people's houses just to try and make a safe path so that we can get the patient out. But absolutely, as you said, being that kind of secondary officer, that person that is assisting the person that's kind of running the job is such an important role. And it's still so important to kind of remain a little bit hands off from the decision making, but try and just facilitate things in the background. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, I thought we'd keep it short and sweet today because obviously I don't want to take up too much of your time as you've just come off shift. So thank you for joining. But I guess my last question for you would be, out of all your experience moving to the UK, going through your role as a paramedic on a DCA, on a single ambulance or a car, should I say, on the bike as a heart officer, what would be your biggest takeaway and learning, I guess, that you'd love to share to anyone in the audience who's a student or a graduate or potentially even, you know, multiple years into their career?
I'd say the biggest takeaway that I have is, and this is going to sound probably really nerdy and corny, but you never know enough. Always keep learning and kind of never stop. So for me, that was going back to uni. I know that not everyone loves to go back to uni and that's fine, but just maintain your CPD, find some element of healthcare that you're interested in and try and just become, you know, try and get that passion and develop a specialism within that. So I've got colleagues that love kind of, you know, all the pathophysiology and the management of like head injury. I've got some colleagues that love kind of their maternity jobs and they kind of think that they're specialists in that area, and that's great. So find something that you love, but always keep learning because the evidence changes, clinical practice changes, you know, depending on the day, the month, the year, we might be giving a drug for something and then we might not be giving it for something. So always just keep learning, learn from your experiences. And probably the other one would be reflect. When things go wrong, they're allowed to go wrong. Things will go wrong. I've made mistakes. Everyone's made mistakes. But just reflect on them and try and take away your learning from that. And also share it with your colleagues because, you know, if you learn something from a job, from a mistake that you've done, let your colleagues know. So hopefully, one, they won't make the mistake, but two, that they've learned something as well. So yeah, always keep learning and reflect, reflect, reflect.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing all your knowledge and just your time. I really, really appreciate it. Do you want to, share where people can find you if they want to reach out to you?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn at Callum Shepherd. I think I'm one of the ones that hopefully appears at the top somewhere, paramedic. And then also one of the work social media pages that I manage is London Ambulance Heart. So we have that on Instagram, and then we also have that on Twitter at LAS_heart as well. So feel free to come along, have a look at what we do. We try to keep posting, you know, relatively often. I've been a little bit slack recently because we've been doing a bit of recruitment. But yeah, that's me. And thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
No worries. Anytime. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.